Hey guys, welcome to this episode re-release. I'm sorry I don't have a new episode for you this week. I was and have been and am working and traveling quite a bit. I was at the upfronts for IFC, Sundance, AMC, and BBC and saw so many people that I totally nerded out over. Some of which I hope to get on the podcast, and then headed straight to Kauai Con. I am here in Hawaii now, and have some hopefully some episodes that will come out of this as well, but nothing recorded yet. So just wanted to get my shout out to Laura, who sent me a wonderful email, and to everyone I had the pleasure of meeting in both places. Certainly the fans at Kauai Con. This is just such a wonderful con and a wonderful group of people, and I think we all know it's not the worst thing in the world to be in the amazing state of Hawaii. So I hope everyone's doing well, and talk to you next time on the podcast.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Casual style. It's very unofficial. The last person I podcast said, I feel like we're playing podcasting. Like she did not say this on the podcast, but she was like, I feel like your mom's going to come in and be like, girls, are you playing with my podcast equipment? And I said, you know, I think you've just hit the nail on the head of why, like, recording at home.
Yeah.
Just, like, sitting on the floor.
I think it's good. Always wanted to be, if I ever had an idea of what my, you know, a podcasting, I think is.
Because you don't have enough going on.
I know. That's my boyfriend's late. I'm going Friday night.
Oh, will you hold it? So, by the way, I'm recording.
Oh, you're recording.
Sorry.
Oh, we're recording.
To tell you.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah. What I need is more projects.
I know.
And I just add them on, not thinking that, hey, you're going to go insane in about 3 weeks because you are doing too many things.
You've been like that the entire time I've known you, which has been many years now.
We've known each other for many years.
I've known you for many years, I can say.
I know.
And that has always been true. We grew up together. We've grown up in Hollywood together.
PFF.
But no, you're like, there are times when people talk to me about how overly busy I am, and I say, have you met Felicia Day? You're very busy also.
Yeah. But you know, I read a whole article about how busy is not an attractive quality. Like, it was a really cool essay on, I don't know what website it was, but about how when this woman asked all her friends how busy they were, they had this frantic look in their eye, like, I'm busy.
Don't worry, I'm really busy.
But
they felt they had to prove that they were busy,
or just like they're just overwhelmed with things.
Yeah.
Are we even living because we're so busy?
Well, yeah. I mean, so did you walk away from that article thinking, oh, that is me. I'm not as present as I would like to be, or did you feel like that's just part of my character and like so
I think that I like to be busy, but at the same time, I know that creatively, when you're not busy, you are thinking up better things. Hmm. So I sort of like stack the books so high all the time until it starts to teeter.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, and I push the books over and then I go in the corner. Yeah.
I understand that too. Were you always like that? Have you always been, I don't want to say an overachiever because I hate when people call me that because I don't feel that I am at all, because I feel an overachiever maybe wouldn't push the books over. They would just like continue to stack them somehow.
To continue to stack them blindly until I broke. I've done that too. I've always been an overachiever. It's always been like, hey, let me show you how great I am, and I'm the best. I'm the best.
Were you super busy in high school? Because I'm busy now, but I was not an overly busy person in high school. I didn't seek out a lot of extracurriculars and stuff.
Oh, you didn't? Were in like chess club and drama and
I was in drama.
Oh,
and that was pretty much it. Like, I rode my bike a lot and I was in plays, but I didn't belong to a bunch of clubs. And I feel like I like scratched my head a little bit at my friends who were doing that. I remember thinking like, you're going to be so busy in college. What? Now's the time.
You had a really long view for a teenager.
I think I maybe did.
Were you like sitting people down? Like, let's talk about time management.
Let's go ahead. Well, no, because I also think I was very pragmatic because I knew
I was a good student. I mean, I was second in my class, but I wasn't like, I didn't have this sort of wealth of here's all this other stuff I did, because I didn't have a sense that I was going to go to like a fancy school to study theater, which was what I was planning.
So you always knew you were going to theater and you're like, I don't need that extracurricular on my resume to get into X school, right?
I guess. Yeah.
That was smart. It's smart, because then you probably lived a lot of really interesting.
I mean, I did a lot of drugs, Felicia. I don't know that I really.
I don't know that I really was.
Yeah, I don't know what that made of me, but I don't really play chess as well as I would like.
I mean, when do you break out a chessboard at a party now?
I guess that's
whereas
true.
Drug stories are always interesting. I'm always jealous of people with really good drug stories. Or like, I'm going to go do shrooms in the Los Angeles forest. I'm like, really? Cool people do that. I'll be at home watching The Good Wife.
I love The Good Wife so
much.
It's
a really good show.
It's so good. You're the first person in sort of the same world as me who is a smart gal who watches that show. I don't know. I don't have a lot of friends who watch that show.
I
know
either.
A lot of people watch it, but I don't have a lot of friends who do. And I feel like I have to defend it. Like, are you imagining Ally McBeal? Because it wasn't that was a horrible show, but it is not that at all.
Not that Ally McBeal was bad.
I'm saying it was its own thing. It was its own goofy, sweet thing. The Good Wife is a little bit more grounded than that.
Yeah. But
just still absurd.
Whoever's listening right now, go Google The Dancing Baby and then just remember that
That's
happened.
Right. It was like a meme before there were memes.
Yeah, it was a pre-meme.
Right? It was a pre-meme. And it was a baby. We've really done good work here already. I should just stop now. I know. Shortest podcast episode ever.
No, I saw The Good Wife. I was on a plane and I was bored and I didn't want to watch yet another How I Met Your Mother rerun. God bless that show. But I was like, no, I want to watch something I've never watched before. And I was like, what's this? And I always
did they have the first episodes or
no,
did you start in the middle?
I just dropped in. Oh, it was like season 3 or something. Yeah. And I could not stop watching. So I watched three episodes and then I just randomly picked up the DVD set and I was on set doing Supernatural a couple weeks ago. And I binge watched 2 seasons in 4 days. It's like 40 hours of television.
Don't do the math. If I could give advice to any binge watcher out there, any advice at all would be don't do the math.
Yeah, that was 3, 4 days. Yeah. It was sunny outside the window when I was watching The Good Wife. It was beautiful.
To me, that's permission to not go outside because I like it when it's foggy and cloudy, which is one of the reasons I like Vancouver.
Really? I can't do it. I get depressed.
You do get depressed.
I feel like I'm in jail.
Like most people do. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's wrong with me. Where were you raised?
I was raised in the South where everything's 100 degrees.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi.
3 different ones.
Yeah.
Where did you spend your high school years?
High school years, Austin, Texas.
Oh, okay.
At San Antonio, Texas, Austin, Texas. So Texan. So it's really hot there. It gets gloomy a little bit, but never below freezing. And it gets 180 in the summer. And then you go inside and it's 60 with the air conditioner and you get the flu because you're dropping 40 degrees when you go in and out. What about you?
I'm from Tucson.
But
that is the reason I give for liking foggy and rainy weather, because I feel like when it's like sort of a warm day, at least there's a few clouds, when it is like a blank blue sky, these poor guys have heard me say this probably a million times on my podcast, I'm always willing to talk about it, when it is just like an empty blue sky devoid of clouds, it's just, and void is sort of a big word for me on that, like it feels very just
empty.
Like ugh. And it's hot, or even if it's not that hot, I get kind of bummed out. And I think it's because I had so many negative memories of being a kid and being hot and bored in Tucson. Because it's like, why would you get summer vacation when
it feels
you don't
endless.
Want to do anything?
Like you're literally walking, you know, those montages where people are
walking
through the
desert. Eating sand. Yeah, I associated so negatively. And so even when I was in high school, like when I visited San Francisco or the Pacific Northwest, I was like, this is what weather's supposed to be like.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be sort of mysterious and foggy. And I get in such a chipper mood, Felicia. I kid you not.
No, I think people really are attracted to different. I mean, I aesthetically like the idea of gloom a little bit, but I notice I get very depressed.
Yeah.
And it might be that seasonal disaffective disorder.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to have sunshine. I have to have great light. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a light situation because it could be cold as hell outside. Mm-hmm. And if the light is beautiful, that's me. I just don't like a gloomy light. I don't know.
And I feel like it could be hot as hell outside if it's really cloudy, like monsoon weather. I'm fine with. Isn't that funny?
It is weird. But you got to know yourself. Life is about
knowing yourself. And then I was convinced maybe it was my Scottish heritage on my mom's side.
Are you Scottish?
But what about
yours? That's weird. I'm Irish and Polish.
So I can't, because then genetics would dictate that you might also be excited about
fog. I've never been to Poland, but maybe it's sunny there.
Might be very sunny in Poland.
Well, you know, I think it was part of that whole, remember that black and blue dress or the white and gold dress thing? Remember the meme that went around where everyone was arguing it was black and blue. No, it's white and gold.
Right.
And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? It is clearly black and blue, guys. And then I got into a huge argument with people I care about who I think are smart, and they saw white and gold. So I'm convinced that we all see different things.
Yeah. I think that's something that even science talks about, right? Is like the subjectiveness of vision in and of itself is kind of like, you could really trip out existentially on that if you wanted to go down that road. What am I actually seeing? How much am I seeing the same thing that you're seeing? And how fundamentally real and true is something if you could be seeing it totally differently than I am?
That's true.
It's fascinating.
Or just like color. We see color differently. So something that I'm attracted to. Like, I love to wear orange. And most people I know are like, you need to stop dressing like a traffic cone. I can't help it. I'm always buying hugely bright colors. But I look at women who wear all black who are sophisticated. And I'm like, oh, God, I wish I wore that drapey black thing. And wear those heels and look all, you know. Like, I'm in New York and I'm smoking a vaporing or whatever they call it.
I'm vaporing. That could almost be like a superhero's way of disappearing, I think. I'm vaporing right now. And then he just vapored. I don't know what happened. He was gone.
Be a good superpower.
Do you have that thing that I have where I don't know, I feel like I've seen pictures of you where you do a pretty good job of looking sophisticated, but I always feel still like a little kid who's trying that on. And so I see pictures of women who sort of, even especially like sexy pictures.
Oh no.
Holy Lord. I can't imagine. I can't imagine knowing what to do with my face to create like a Maxim style expression.
I don't know how I would make fun of them. I would look like I was farting the whole time.
And some of them do.
I don't ever go to events. And when the inevitable, it's usually a video game event because I go there because I get free things. Mm-hmm. But it's Comic-Con or a video game event. And when I take a picture on the red carpet, I always feel like I have to have a booger. I have to look really wide. I don't know how to stand properly. My purse is, I'm a heathen because I don't have my nails painted properly. I did my own hair. I never am groomed by other people. Right. So I know it looks like a rat's nest.
That's how I feel.
And then
I don't take the steps. I don't feel like I want to go to a stylist or get
groomed. Oh, no, God, no.
I guess I'm just like agreeing to be that person. Like, I'm going to be the person who did my own hair, guys. That's just who I'm going to be.
I'm never going to be that polished. I'm never going to actually have, for a couple years, I tried to angle it so I get a free dress.
Yeah.
I was like, if there's anything in life I've earned, is that a free outfit for Comic-Con.
If there's anything in life I've earned. Yeah.
And then I would start knocking on doors and they would be like, Felicia, who? No, you can't have anything free. Or, and the nail in the coffin was one year, this was probably 5 years ago or something, I finally got a stylist house because they have these places, they're PR places.
Right.
And you go and there are racks of clothing for free that you can take out.
Right.
Or designers have sample rooms that you can go in.
Right.
Well, I tried every angle possible and finally someone who did makeup for Dancing on the Stars on a random set that I did a favor for somebody because she was a friend of his.
Yeah.
Said, hey, my sister runs a PR agency that lends clothes out.
Oh,
so
my.
I'm going to hook you up. And I was like, boom, made it.
Yeah.
Hollywood, open up for me. So I went to this place and it was like in the Pacific Design Center, which is super fancy.
Yes, it is.
And I was like, oh, this is where the stars go to get free things, except they have them delivered. But I'll go.
Yeah.
I pay for parking.
It's a step up. It's a step in that direction.
I'm going to get something for free.
Yeah.
I love it. Free things are great. Who doesn't like free? I'll get something free even if I don't want it. I'll be like, give it to me. It's free. I don't want it. I'll give it away. But I want to have had it for a moment. So I go in and there's very snotty. Like literally, it's like that woman in Pretty Woman who makes fun of Julia Roberts when she comes in. This is how these girls were. And they're like, oh, this way. And I'm like, oh, I really like this. No. So we start going into the bowels of this clothes lending place. All the bright, fun encore, you know, kind of this season stuff in the front. And they're like, oh, no, that rack isn't for you. Literally show me to the back of the place.
Amazing.
And this is in, by the way, May or June.
Yeah.
Everything, they have one rack at the corner for me.
Oh,
and it's all wool, black, floor length maroon, like clearly from like two seasons ago in winter.
Yeah.
One rack for people whose friends of friends who they don't really know who the hell I am.
Right.
So I took a dress, but it was so ugly because it was the only one. I was like, are you sure? I can't. No.
Oh my God.
And then
not you, dear.
In during that time, like this reality star came in. I don't even know who she was, but they were fawning all over her, like literally stacks of dresses, sneakers. They were like, just take this one for free and keep it. So I took a dress and I was like, this is not happening for me. So I went to Forever 21 and got a dress.
Smart. There you go.
And I returned the dress and I had to drive, you know, I probably spent more in parking than I did on the Forever 21 dress that I actually wore to the event. And then I was like, screw it. I'm not going to beg to be dressed again.
Yeah.
I will not.
I think you've just kind of hit the nail on the head of like sort of what I think that people have an expectation about, like if you, and I probably was like this too before I was in the business, and this is not like a show business podcast, but I probably would have made certain blanket assumptions about, well, if I've seen you on television, number one, you probably have a ton of money. Mm-hmm. Number two, everyone must open doors for you, mm-hmm. you know, in that way. And number three, I'll never be able to relate to any of that. And now, you know, even from like the start, when you first actually come into LA and you sort of are dropped into the reality of it, you find out that there are like 18 different versions of LA, and even, you know, 17 of them are all show business. Like, it's, you can absolutely exist in the business and never have an experience. I've never gone to the design center to be shuffled into the back of a, you know what I mean? Like,
you could only aspire.
I feel very lucky. Yeah. I mean, maybe one day,
one day it's going to be happening for you, Dan.
Yeah. And so that's just not something. And I think if you're someone who makes it a goal to kind of be a part of that culture, yeah, you can sort of like weasel your way in if you just like had kept pushing at those doors.
Exactly.
But you don't have time for that because you are a person who is grounded, who has a life, who has a lot of enterprises that you're taking care of.
I hope so. I think it is. Yeah, you have to make it a priority to be in. You have to make it a priority. Like, I want to be invited to that premiere, or I want to go to this.
Right.
I want to be in that social ecosystem
that
reaps those kind of benefits. And I just am not, and I don't have the energy, and I don't have very much in common with people like that, to be honest with you. So there's not really much to talk about when I go, and then I just feel like I've wasted an evening of my life. So I would rather be at home petting my dog or my cats or whatever.
Being a hermit, it's the best.
It's really good. Yeah. That means if you see me, it's special.
Well, number one, yes, it's like a unicorn sighting. Number two, I feel like you and I are both busy bee day workers, mm-hmm. which is what I am. Like, I'm very busy during the day. Mm-hmm. And then at night, I feel like, oh, this is the time when I don't have to do those things.
Yes.
And that includes going to a bar now for me in my life. Like, no. I'm not going to go yell at someone about something.
It's so inconvenient. In my dream, I would open a bar that doesn't serve much alcohol, but they serve tea.
And it's quiet enough that you can have a conversation.
Yes. Everyone needs to be able to talk. I hate parties where I have to scream because then I have horrible acid reflux. And if I speak above this level, I will have like, I'll lose my voice for a week.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's giving me cancer and all these things. And I'm like, no, I don't want to yell. I know. Why can't we talk in these voices?
Why can't we just talk in our library voices and drink tea?
Exactly. One day I will have an evening open till 2 a.m., but you don't have to yell. You can read a book in the corner. Yeah,
I think that sounds great. You know what I would even go to, as I was just thinking about this? I was thinking like, well, when I do socialize in the evening, what is the thing that I get most excited about? And I would say it is an organized game night.
Oh, yes. I was going to say.
And so if I could go to a place that was like organized game night and people weren't just sloppy drunk everywhere, I could maybe get on board for that.
Yeah.
Like, or we're going to go somewhere and we're going to play charades with people that we don't know that well. We can be a little buzzed, but it's not going to be like loud, crazy, insane party.
There's a game house in Glendale that's really fun. It's game cafe.
Maybe I have heard of it.
Yeah, it's really fun. You can bring your friends and you just rent a table basically, and you they have hundreds of games there as a library.
See, that's maybe what I should
do. That's what I'll go out. If someone invites me to game night, I'll be like, I'm there. If they invite me to their party, party,
I'm invite you to game night.
Premiere. I don't know. I'm just not going probably. Yeah. A one woman show,
That's a real risk.
That's a hard one.
That's a risk.
I'm trying to be more supportive. Exactly. Like, fine. But if it's a board game, I'm there. Yeah. I'm there 100%. That's why in a video game thing, I'm like, I'm going to get a free copy of a game.
That's right.
I'm going to see people I know briefly, and mm-hmm. I'll be able to sit there and play video games
and the best of all worlds.
Exactly. There's nothing better than a video game party. Yeah.
Did you play, I mean, I'm sure you've answered this before, but when you were in high school, were you playing a lot of video games?
Yeah, in high school, I mean, I didn't go to high school, but during the years that I was in high school, I played a lot of video games.
Okay, let's talk about that right away. Were you homeschooled?
I was homeschooled, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was homeschooled, and then I went to college when I was 16, so.
Homeschooled in Austin. What are your parents like that
my mom's a big hippie, and my dad's in the military, okay. So he moved around a lot, and we were kind of like forced into sort of either living somewhere with horrible schools and go to school and becoming maybe very educated well, or be homeschooled. So so it was fun. I did a lot of extracurricular things too, like violin and dancing and all those other things. And
were those more social environments that you kind of went in? Like, was it just you, Daniel? Was your brother homeschooled? And do you have any other siblings?
I have a younger brother. Yeah, I have a brother who's slightly younger than me. We're very, very close in age. And we I did a lot of theater, and he did karate, and you know, we have a lot of extracurriculars that we did. So because I was really good at violin, which I ended up studying in college, you know, going to school 8 hours a day, my mom was like, ah, screw that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was legal, but it happened. So
yeah. Well, I'm always fascinated by any sort of version of school that isn't public school, because that was definitely my experience, was just public school. But I think about did your mom bring in people, or was she doing it?
She did some of it.
That just feels like a huge commitment for a parent. Like, yeah. In my mind, maybe it's because I don't have kids and I struggle with whether I want them sometimes. I think to myself, like, God, I feel like the respite you get is you are at work and you don't have to be a mom for a second, or you're at home, even if you're a stay-at-home parent. That your responsibility isn't also to them and educating them during the day. It seems very heroic effort.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot to take on. My mom was more into unschooling, so it wasn't as hands on. But you know, it allowed me to. And I actually just wrote a book, and a lot of about my childhood is in there. It allowed me to be unconscious about the way I am and to like the things I like.
Yeah,
because I think, especially when you're in a traditional school environment, there are a lot of gender assumptions that you learn and that unconsciously sort of inform your choices as you go through life. And I think I avoided a lot of those things. And that's why I'm kind of like, hey, I like this, versus being ashamed of it or just saying, oh, I was into that, but I dropped it.
Right.
So I think it's good and bad. You know, obviously I don't think I'm as socialized as well as other people.
Do you still feel that now? Or do you feel like you sort of came through that? Cause that's, I guess those are really formative years in a lot of those ways.
I don't think I'm socialized well. I mean, I can be just as happy alone as with other people.
But I mean, I can too, and I'm an only child, and here I was, you know, in high school.
So, it's also it could hard be to just know, a like, personality.
Nature versus nurture. Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting to think about whether if I had a kid, I would homeschool them. I would definitely have the impulse to be a lot more innovative or liberal with. I wouldn't want a traditional school upbringing, because I think, despite some of the drawbacks, I think that I came out of it much more my own person.
I think that's great. But I don't know. It's funny because I've had a couple of people who were homeschooled on the podcast.
Really?
And I don't know that we ever covered that specific thing, which now that you're saying it seems like the number one focus of conversation if you were homeschooled. It totally makes sense, of course, that you would develop as the person that you are without any kind of peer pressure. I can't believe that that's not something that hasn't been more of a focal point in that conversation. But
yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it also is that you're not exposed to as many things, maybe, or you're not exposed to things that might be things you might be interested in had you known about them. So right. I think there's back and forth. I do think specifically gender things were definitely to my advantage, or in my eyes, to my advantage, because I never assumed that as a girl I wouldn't be into something, or that it wasn't cool, or especially boys won't like me if I'm into this, or boys are telling me I'm not supposed to be into this.
Right, right.
So
what were you, did you do like physical activities too? Like, did you play any sport? I mean, your brother was
sports?
Doing karate.
No, if you throw a ball at me, I will assume it's trying to kill me.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes it
probably is.
Yeah.
No, I did a lot of ballet and dance every single day, like hours and hours and hours. And then I did a little bit of karate because my brother did it, and I was just hanging around and I just took lessons, but certainly no group sports activities. I think that's why I got into acting, because I did do community theater, musicals a lot, mm-hmm. and because I found that sense of community and belonging, yeah. that's why I wanted to go into acting, is because, like, wow, those were my happiest times when I was creating with other people and we were together making something.
And was it, like, all ages, or was it mostly?
Yeah, it was all ages.
Because, see, that is also really interesting to me, the idea that you weren't socialized around a bunch of people your age and that you then also were able to feel comfortable around people of all ages. That fits to me with, you know,
yeah.
what you do now and kind
what
of.
I do now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. Absolutely. When I see somebody who's 10, I'm going to treat them exactly like I would treat somebody who's 70.
Yeah.
And I will see them for the person they are versus, like, oh, I'm not supposed to get along with this person because they're way older or way younger yeah. than me. Because everybody has something interesting about themselves, and especially their point of view at the time of life they're in. Like, there's, mm-hmm. we can learn from everybody all the time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. That's definitely an aspect of who I am, that I value. Even though it is, I do see people shunning people who are certain, you know, older than them or younger than them. It's yeah. like, oh, you're not my contemporary because of your age. And I'm like, well, that's why the online world is so attractive to me. It's just because not only age, background, interests, like, people congregate around people they are drawn to and they have commonality with and they mm-hmm. like the vibe of and community.
Yeah, that's a really positive attitude about being online and those online communities that, again, I don't think I've, like, articulated to myself, but of course that makes sense that you know, you're being united by something that isn't just, like, an immediate thing you can spot and judge visually.
Yeah. But well, you're being dropped in. You're basically saying, oh, you're in a group because yeah. of your age.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have to get along.
I'm not interested in you. I am interested in you. I'm not in you.
Yeah.
But and then the sort of, like, the dark side of the online part of that, I guess, is the anonymity, in the sense there are people who, you know, like, explode a lot of negativity because there's something that they create, this sort of feeling of removal from it, which is makes yeah. me sick to my stomach.
I yes, there's a lot of bad things online, and I genuinely, when I stop feeling hurt at some of the things people say to me or do towards me, I feel sorry for them, because I know that when in times of my life when I've been super anxious or angry or lashing out at other people, it doesn't make me feel better.
Yeah.
It's never satisfying to tear somebody else down. You do it because of emotions that are not positive in your own life. So it's almost like you have to feel sorry for those people, because if they're deriving joy, they are sociopaths.
Correct.
And that's, like, a medical problem.
Correct.
But other than that, people who do tear other people down generally do it from maybe a lack of self-esteem mm-hmm. or feeling good about themselves mm-hmm. or resenting what they don't have.
And it does. And you're so right. It doesn't create that output does not create a positive loop where
yeah.
you're actually feeling good. I remember the first time. It seems like such a cliche now, and I can't believe there was ever a time I hadn't heard this, but I do remember the first time someone said about revenge, which is essentially the same idea, right? Mm-hmm. Is that revenge is like drinking the poison and then expecting the other person to die. I was this is the first time you've heard it. I was like very impacted by that. I was like, that
sounds like it's Asian yes. saying. It should be on a coffee cup.
Yes, right? Like, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
It really made sense to me. And it's just one of those things where, like, it was said to me at the in the right place at the right time, or it's just one of those adages that is, like, so, you know, ubiquitous now that, or it just feels so, like, it ubiquitously applies to so much that I seriously was like, this is... I'm very, very.
You'll never forget that, right?
I'll never forget that. It really makes sense. And that's the idea, right? Is like, I'm going to say something shitty about you
mm-hmm.
and you're just poisoning yourself.
Yeah.
And then you're sort of waiting for the other person to make you feel better by them feeling awful.
Yeah, your anger and punishing someone else is somehow going to make your life better, which
glowing,
is not
beautiful.
Exactly.
No.
It's funny. Like, there are certain things that I had an acting teacher who told me one time in class, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, boom, head explosion. So honestly, even to this day, like 10 years later, if I don't change, like, the toilet roll in the bathroom, I'm like, okay, so that's your whole life. That's
your
work.
Let me give you my version.
That's your creativity.
Let me give you my daily version that I just said to someone when someone was like, because I just like painted and moved and kind of unpacked everything very, very quickly and sort of set things in order. And someone just said, like, are you just a person who does that? And I was like, messy bed, messy head. messy bed, messy head. Wow. You get it. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
I just need to, if I need, like, I need to sort of feel, I mean, that doesn't mean that I don't, you know, I mean, I have some shit lying around. I have, like, you know, dusting that needs to happen. I'm not, like,
yeah,
you know, aggro cleaning all the time, but I do feel like there is a sense of sort of, and that's not true for everyone. Some people are,
some people can't do that.
Slobs, and they're, yeah, and then they're astonishingly great accountants or whatever. Yeah. To me, those things seem like they shouldn't be connected.
No, me neither. I mean, I'm the kind of person who likes to prepare 8 months in advance for something. And then, yeah, some people are like last minute Lucy's. And I'm, yeah, like, I hate the way you work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I'm the same way. If I feel like my life is getting out of control and I'm not doing good work when things are chaotic around me.
Is that, and then so, you push your,
yeah,
but then you create the chaos of pushing all of the books. Push over them over,
yeah, and then you rebuild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you, it wasn't, oh, sorry. Did I interrupt you?
Oh, no, no, no.
I was going to say, was, but is ballet competitive? Like, does it have that? I never took ballet, so I'm...
Oh, ballet's super competitive.
Did you feel early on, like, I think I might be a competitive person? I mean, I know when you're a kid, you don't necessarily have that kind of self-awareness, but maybe you do. I don't know. Did you feel a sense of, like, I need to be... Because, like you said earlier, jokingly, but this sense of, like, well, shit, if I'm doing this, I better be the best at this.
Yeah, I always wanted to be the best. I wanted, yeah, to be the special one and everybody to admire me and look at the little prodigy. Uh-huh. You know, that's just something in me. It would
well, I bet if you were good at something at first and you got a taste for that, then your expectation is like, oh, I need that feeling. That's how I'm seen and that's how I need to feel. Yeah,
which is not healthy. Like, yeah, that's not a good way to be through life. And it's something I fight a lot. But I always want to be the best. I want to be the special.
Well, let me ask you this. How does that factor in when it comes time to start something brand new that you're going to be bad at for a while? Because I was terrible at allowing myself to make mistakes for a long time.
Oh yeah.
And it's taken me, that is a long process, right? I'm not saying like, and now I'm great at it. I'm still terrible at it. I know I'm better at it than I used to be, but I remember getting like a grade report from public school. Now listen, a grade would be like an A, B, C. I'm just kidding. Like, it, like, you've never heard of grades.
I know. I went to college.
I had, but this is back when we would get, I was so young that you wouldn't get an A, B, C, or D, or E. You would get an E, an S, an N, or something else. And that's like excellent, you know, satisfactory.
So you want an E.
Improvement. Is E, S, I, N.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, satisfactory, improving, or needs improvement. That was, ooh, the grading system. And I remember getting an N for, like, accepts constructive criticism. Like, I remember, and wow, I remember that. I remember a teacher being like, I would do that differently. And I would be like, no, no. Like, I didn't make a mistake. Don't tell me I made a mistake.
Yeah. No, I definitely, that's been something I've struggled with, not being perfect right out of the gate, especially in writing. So, because writing is a messy process and you can't expect, you'll never get over yourself doing anything creative if you think you're going to just poop out gold every time.
Yeah.
And that's definitely been a huge learning curve, right, in life, especially since I grew up like, hey, I'm an A. I do, yeah, everything perfect.
Yeah.
And being able to be brave enough to be like, I'm going to do something crappy today.
Yeah.
Because if I do something crappy today, then I can make it better tomorrow. And I still struggle with that. Absolutely.
I would say that across the board with my creative friends who do a lot of different things and include myself in this, writing is the scariest.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why, is that you just have to sort of, I don't know why. Like, you'd think that it would be, I mean, someone who's a, like, friends of mine who are professional writers, even they kind of struggle with it sometimes. But, you know, like my friend who writes fiction would just look at me if I said that and say, you do improv. That's terrifying. How can you be more afraid of something that you're putting on a page where you have all the time in the world to sort of finesse it and da da da? And like, and I'm like, I don't know if you improvise, it's over and done, and it is what it is. And if it was great, then, well, it was brilliant. And if it wasn't great, you have the excuse of it just having been spontaneous.
Exactly,
whereas with writing,
yeah,
you have to deliver, you know, you feel like you have to deliver the best version. And I think the fear of not getting to that is like, can be paralyzing for people.
Very paralyzing. Yeah, being brave. And then also only having yourself as a gauge, because you're working in a vacuum.
Yeah.
But you're all, and that's the advantage, because you can take as long as you want and work on it as long as you want. But it also is the fear that it begins and ends with me. So what I show people now means that's the best I can do. Uh-huh. So I better make it great.
Yeah.
Or I'm a failure because, oh, it needs to all come from you. So it's a lot more pressure.
And the idea of someone being like, no, this is a great first draft, but, and you're like, what? What?
No.
What do you mean? It's supposed to be better than this? I'm not sure. I'm done with it, though. I'm done with that idea, though.
Oh, yeah, sure. That was a first draft, except I went it over 50 times.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
it's exactly. Very hard. I like writing, but the process of it is very painful. And I like having written.
Yeah. Yeah. So the starting of it, boy, that can really tie me up for weeks. Now, the other thing that I'm wondering about is, were you competitive with your brother?
No, we did different things. Yeah. So that's the good thing. We weren't ever competitive with each other, I think. I mean, I was overachiever and Ryan was more of an underachiever. And I think, you know, probably my overachieving was not helpful to him growing up, because I was always like, look at your sister, look at your sister, look at, you know.
Yeah.
And I can only reflect on that now. I was just so determined to be the best. I didn't really regard that as having rubbed off on him. But I can imagine it was a really high bar to set.
Yeah.
Because I was just naturally great at a lot of things that got a lot of praise. And his interests, you know, they were elsewhere. And he was a lot more quiet and less outgoing. And so, yeah, I don't know. But the good thing is that we were never in the same bin together. Mm-hmm. So, which I think is super important. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't imagine two kids growing up and it's like, both of you are pianists, go.
And sisters, you know, like stuff, that kind of stuff. Even if you're not in a public situation, like a public school situation, I think there's still stuff that's like kind of quietly getting imposed.
Really? I always wanted a sister.
Did you?
I mean, sorry, Ryan.
Is it too late?
Yeah.
It might be. You did always want a sister?
Yeah. I always wanted a sister.
I never wanted either.
But you're an older kid?
Yeah, you weren't my only children.
Did you ever want a kid? A brother or sister?
I never did. And I don't know. I certainly wasn't spoiled because we had no money. And my parents were divorced. So I just had like, you know, one parent here, one parent there, and neither remarried. But I think I saw most of my friends fighting with their siblings a ton. And I think I thought, like, this seems hard.
Yeah, because a lot of my friends are having kids now. I guess it's that age, that 30s age, where your uterus starts to shrivel into an acorn. And it's like, get it out.
Yeah.
Or get it or put it up.
Yeah.
But they're all like, oh, no, we want to make sure to have two. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? That sounds awful.
It's a lot of work.
I have two cats.
It's a lot of work
to feed them.
Yeah.
And you can't close the kid up if you don't want to talk to him.
That's right.
But the whole rationale that you're like, oh, you have to have them be friends. I'm like, well, it's nice to see somebody who is an only child and not like totally narcissistic. And
well, listen, I mean, I'm sure there are people who would say that I was. I don't think I am, but I definitely feel like I have stuff that I have qualities. I might have been talking about this recently on here, but I have qualities that I don't want to accept are because I'm an only child. And and that's another thing, like making mistakes, that I'm trying to get better at because I had no control over it. So,
well, aren't we good people at least have self-reflective qualities and we're like, I want to be different.
And also you want it how you want it, just like I want it how I want it. And you're not an only child. So I don't know. Again, it goes to like, I don't know how much of that is personality. And
it's personality, I think.
I think it really might be. Now, how does like dating factor into teenage years when you're...
not very much. I was always just focused on my work. Mm-hmm. So it's probably not great. And I went to college so young that it wasn't like I was integrated into college as much. So
how old were you when you went into college?
16.
Yeah.
I just turned 16. So I was very young, very immature. And I was in a music building. So it was, you know, it was a little bit more supportive.
In Austin?
In Austin, yeah.
It was. What school was that? Like
University of Texas.
University
Austin.
UT.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, it's different. Like obviously my background, and I talk about it a lot in my book, is very different from other people's, and that's okay.
What's your book called, and can people get it now?
They can get it in August. Mm-hmm. So August 11th, and it's called You're Never Weird on the Internet Almost.
Great.
So I spent a year and a half writing it, and I'm pretty proud of it.
How long did it take you to come up with a genius title?
A long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that's another thing where I would be like, I would be worried that there was always one next better title in my brain around the corner and that I would be afraid to settle on anything, but that's a really great title.
I've made dozens of shows, and I have to tell you that I do have a knack for titles, I feel
nice.
I will have to say, not to brag, I feel like I'm good at titling.
Oh, I'm going to call you if I have a book.
Exactly. It's very, very hard. But I actually sent this to the publisher, and they were kind of on the fence about it because somebody didn't want a long title. And I literally spent two more months thinking of titles, which if it doesn't hit, it doesn't hit.
Right.
And I thought of a couple of alternates, but then we circle back around and we're like, oh, that's that one. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, good. Cause that's the one I wanted anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're great to work with. It's just titles, you know, it's very tough and it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And,
huge
forever, even especially for shows, you know, when I'm thinking of a new web show or whatever, I'm like, is it vivid enough? Is it, Is it something that stands out? Can I see a logo that goes with it? Does it have a feeling to it? Because I'm very sensory. Like when I read something or watch an edit, I'm like, I don't feel like this is right. I don't like the vibe.
Right.
And it's kind of this weird, I can't describe it kind of feeling that mixes all the senses together when I'm like, oh, that's going to be a success.
Yeah.
And it's very rare. It's cool
that you trust that because that sounds very gut oriented too.
Very gut oriented, yeah. Which is weird because I have a lot of stomach issues. So.
I do too.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We have that in common.
I know. Food allergies? You. Yes, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What kinds?
Gluten is a very, very drastic one.
Really? Do you have celiac?
I don't have celiac, but all my stuff is thyroid-based.
I have a thyroid dump, too.
Yeah, listen.
We should dish about thyroid things. I could talk hours about thyroid. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow to get my remeasure because I'm pretty sure it slowed down again.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's a real like...
Now, is that... you're saying gluten is associated with your thyroid directly?
Yeah, that was something that I was told when I first... because I have little nodules growing on mine, you know, and so I constantly have to get them checked for cancer and this and that and biopsies and all that kind of good stuff. And the questions that were asked of me were those things where... you kind of think you have like eight things wrong with you. And then it turns out all eight things are connected to just one thing, which feels like such a relief. It's also still frustrating, but it's like, oh, that can be that. Oh, okay. I'm not crazy, you know? And so there's definitely a lot of that, but thyroid medication, which I'm on, I don't know if you are, but that's a weird thing where like what your own body is producing is fluctuating, whether the medication is working. So
you have to constantly, have to constantly. Yeah. When I'm under stress, which I found out that I really affects my body in amazingly negative ways. And all my problems also are in the throat area. Yeah. And I'm sure there's
And also losing your voice easily. That's something that I was asked early on. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, that's thyroid related.
No, I have thyroid and acid reflux problems like out the wazoo. This whole area needs to be excised from my body. But it's directly related to the stress.
Nice neck. I'd like you to have a neck. I don't want you to have a
thank you. I always thought it was good. It's got a ballet neck.
Yeah,
but neck. I notice when I'm not stressed, I can literally eat anything and it doesn't affect me at all. But when I'm stressed, even if I have a croissant, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horrible. I can't. Yeah. It's interesting. It's really interesting. It's hard to be aware of your body like screaming, don't do that anymore. Like, don't have chocolate. Stop.
Yeah. Well, the other parallel that I would then probably draw between us is the sort of tough versus sensitive thing, which is like, I feel sometimes like I'm the toughest woman in the world. And then I realize, and then sometimes I feel like so frail and so frustrated by my frailty.
Yeah.
And it's a lot to sort of have all those.
It's a lot to have the, I think that's women get screwed over a lot in that if you are hard, then you're not considered attractive or appealing and you're a bitch and you're, you know, bossy and all that stuff. And then you show your vulnerability and then you're discounted as not able to do things.
Yeah. She's too, listen, she's too vulnerable.
Too vulnerable, too neurotic, too easily to, too sensitive, you know, and it's kind of this hard line you have to walk and embrace who you are, that you could be a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Because certain circumstances put you in certain mindsets. You feel like, oh, I need to be really strong here.
Right.
To inability to be do business in order to have people pay attention to me.
Right.
Or as an actor, I need to be like, punch me in the heart. It's totally cool. especially when you're in this business, when you're like putting your emotions out there and then you need to ferret them back in because you're rejected and it punches you.
Yeah.
And then you need to get them out.
I know.
And put them right there on the shelf.
That's
so everyone can.
People go crazy.
They're crazy. And I'm not going to say I'm not crazy, but
yeah,
I think that that's why I like doing different things besides just being an actor, because I don't think in being an actor, I didn't deal with all of that well. It's too much. It's too much to be always vulnerable and rejected
always
all the time.
In service to like the thing that someone else is going to give you rather than being able to make things happen for yourself, which totally makes sense. Okay, so you weren't doing a whole lot of dating. I mean, I don't think that's bad or good. I just think that is what it is. It's just like the path that some of us end up on. When you did start dating, who were you like drawn to? Unless you don't want to talk about that.
I don't really like talking about that much, but generally artists, people who are creative, because I admire people who are creative and I love somebody else's ideas, making me excited about my ideas and their ideas. And I think the one thing we can offer the world is our unique creativity, because nobody else is going to come up with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So the more true you are to your own impulses that delight you, the better.
Yeah.
Because no one else is going to be able to do that. So when I see somebody who is as open or free or more open and free with bravely putting forth what's special about their point of view in life, I think that's attractive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's more attractive. I'm sort of blind to people's backgrounds, or, you know, it's just really, that's the most attractive quality, somebody who has a passion for something.
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I also like that you know, for being somebody who you wanted to be great at stuff and you didn't necessarily want a bunch of people to be better than you at stuff, it's still awesome to be in a position where you foster now in your life, and have for some time, really fostered other people's ideas and sort of been...
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. You know, there have been times when I have neglected myself in doing that, which have made me unhappy. Mm-hmm. So in going through, especially the last couple of years doing a business and all this stuff, it's like, I know that I do derive a lot of pleasure in helping people get their voice out, as long as my voice is being taken care of.
Yeah.
And
that's very reasonable.
But it's hard to balance all those things, because really one project is a full-time job. And I do 20 and I just can't help the impulse to pile more and more on myself. And, you know, it's a constant sort of struggle to be realistic and know that if you take on too much, then you're going to disappoint yourself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I say no to so many things, and I know people get their feelings hurt. Like, even if it's like, you're not tweeting my Kickstarter for me.
Right.
Like, but then you don't realize, like, I only have enough bandwidth and I have to take care of myself. And the thing, if everybody got to use the bandwidth or my creativity or my time the way that they want to, A, I wouldn't have any left for myself, and B, I would devalue myself to the point where I'm not valuable to anybody, and then you notice a lot of people disappear.
Yeah.
It's just...
That's great. I mean, listen, I think that's a very hard thing to understand without going through it.
Success. Yeah. You success know? Brings as many burdens and, as...
Yeah.
It, as you... think the opposite.
Yeah, you're like, hey, listen, it's gonna be smooth sailing.
It's awesome. If I could just get there, if I just get this successful, if I just, people could admire me in this way.
Yeah.
But that brings so many different things that are just so much more problematic to work with. Like, it's very, I think John Green once said, he tweeted, which really stuck with me, is like, there's nothing more isolating than fame and recognition. There's nothing more lonely than fame and recognition. And it's true. And then you start closing yourself off, and then you start being uncertain as to the people around you.
Yeah.
If it is it, and even people's compliments are feel conditional, so that you always have to be, oh God, I better not become irrelevant or not make something great, because then they'll go away.
Right.
I always wanted all these friends, and yet now it's dependent on me being an overachiever. So going through that process and then coming out the other end with, you know, being having a perspective about, okay, these are where my priorities need to lie, whether I'm successful or not.
Yeah.
It's been a long road to figure it out.
No, I think, and everything that you're saying about, like, the kind of person that you are too, that it feels like everything can feed into everything else, and everything sort of becomes, I mean, I'm sort of speaking in the abstract, but everything kind of becomes a tool to use, because I'm just talking about myself. I'm not going to pretend like this is you.
Okay, let's talk
about
you.
I feel like it's hard for me to separate, like, everything sort of feels like it's part of everything else. And so I think I had to learn how to keep certain things safe and foundational. And, like, that's just going to be a constant. And no matter what, that's not going to be affected.
Yes.
Which is a constant balance struggle, right?
But yeah.
That it's not going to be like, whatever mood I'm in will affect all of these things, or whatever's happening to me in my personal life will automatically feed into my professional life. Like, learning how to create boundaries that can be movable, you know, as is called for.
Yeah.
But not to think, like, I think creative people sometimes just, like, everything is everything.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Oh, no. I struggle with that all the time. That. And then you think, biologically, if you have a thyroid problem or an endocrinological problem, you kind of, or you go through a depression, you kind of realize that your body makes you think things that might not be reality.
Oh, yes.
And that's very hard to realize as well, because you don't know, you're not living in a reality sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just girl problems.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Just brain problems.
Yeah.
And emotion problems.
And it becomes so important to have, I think, those core people that don't, you don't feel like they're respect or love for you is conditional, and that there are voices of reason who are like, I know you because I've seen you in these 80 different settings.
Yeah.
And I know what the setting is. And the setting is you think something's real and it's just your body is exhausted. And
yeah.
And I need to help be that outside voice saying, like, you need to take a breath and don't make any decisions right now because you're not.
What you're feeling right now is not reality. Yeah. And also, like, just concentrating your efforts on cultivate. I mean, I'm not a very good friend in general because I just go off and I work and I'm like, turn around. I'm like, oh, you had four babies, you know? So that's something I'm constantly, you know, having gone through a lot the last couple of years. Like, okay, let's make sure that I'm not rewarding the most persistent people with my time just because they're persistent.
That's a good one too. That's a really good one.
Yeah. And concentrate on people who, if I were just decided tomorrow to be a barista in Portland, which could happen at any point,
because
I love coffee and sometimes I'm just like, this isn't worth
Portland.
It. Would those people still be in my life?
Yeah.
Regardless of everything that I've achieved and or stand for or whatever it is, would they still be like, hey, I still want to come over and play board games with you?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what I try to at least peel some time off to invest in those relationships, because those will be the ones that down the line will still exist.
Absolutely. God, that, I can't think of a better way to segue into this MASH game that I have to play with you.
What is it?
I don't know if this is something you ever played because you were not socialized in public schools the way I was. So this is a game where MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house. And when you're a kid, guys, I apologize because I always forget to like explain what this is offline because I just make the stupid assumption that people will know and many people
don't. Now I don't know, so you need to tell me.
Many people don't. When you're a kid, you play it and you're playing with a friend and they're like, okay, give me three types of car you would drive. Okay, give me three types of pet you would have. And it's the sort of game where by the end you've created this process of elimination by which you're like, you ended up driving a Corvette, you have a pet dog, you live in, you know, Hawaii. And so that's the sort of like fictitious game world that this MASH game creates. But I like to customize my categories according to what we talked about and what I know about you.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with my first category. Again, by the end, you will end up with only one from each category and you'll see how we get
there. Okay. You just ask me the things.
I just blew your mind.
Ask me the things. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Okay. So number one is three video games that you can go into that because their worlds that have been created there are real. So you can go in as much or as little as you want. But it's like you're going in and living in this world.
Oh, which one's what I want to
three.
Live? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Easy. Fallout.
Great.
Ultima.
Okay.
And Dragon Age.
Great.
Or Mass Effect. Mass Effect.
Mass Effect. Okay.
Mass Effect. Let's do Mass Effect.
Okay.
Because we already got the fantasy with Ultima, and I really like bread baking in that.
Okay, there you go. Okay, speaking of bread baking, three foods or drinks, I think foods is probably a better use of it, that for whatever reason now you cannot allow yourself to indulge in as much as you would like, be it because of acid reflux or this or that. Three things that can be as specific or as general as you want. Could be pizza. Could also be like this very specific type of pizza that you got this one time in Chicago, blah, blah, blah. Three, that in this world, you can have it at the snap of a finger and there's nothing wrong about it. It's just like delicious, nutritious joy.
Oh my God. Street food in Thailand.
Wonderful. That's the way to play this game.
Okay.
That is the way to
I know
play
how
this
to
game.
Own.
You're killing it.
I know how to own fantasy lives.
That's great.
Half
that's
the time I'm
happening.
Like, why can't I just watch House Hunters and I'm like, why can't I just go to the Caribbean like them?
Well, get ready because that's going to be the next category.
Okay.
Thai street food.
Okay. Thai street food. Chocolate croissants.
Because
I can't have chocolate now. And burger and onion rings.
Wonderful.
Because can't have onions.
Forget it.
Oh my.
Garlic too.
Garlic is the, I can't have it.
People are surprised. People don't trust me. They're like, is it just not that you don't like this? Like,
no, you don't understand.
Like, no. It's crippling.
It's crippling. And chocolate and avocado is the saddest one that I've found out in the last 6 months.
God, and it feels like that would just be the smooth, creamy coating.
You'd think.
God damn
You'd
it.
Think.
God damn it.
It's a devil food.
It's a devil food. Not to be confused with devil's food cake, which is delicious. Number three. So you're going to give me three places in the world that you have a vacation home. A vacation home.
Barcelona.
Wonderful.
Chiang Mai. Mm-hmm. And I need a beach. I think Plasencia, Belize.
Okay. Sounds wonderful.
Those are my three favorite trips ever I took. And they're good. It's like a little spread out. I have.
Yeah, got it. Where's Chiang Mai? I don't know.
Chiang Mai is in the north of Thailand. Okay, it's kind of like a small city that is kind of artsy, tourist, but not too touristic. Mm-hmm. And just like one of the coolest places I've ever been.
Oh, this is very good to know about.
Elephants.
Elephant. I love that at the end of that. Elephants. Okay. Next category is three fictional characters. It could be from film, television, video games, books, whatever. That three that you would like to be like your best bud. Like somebody you could call and hang out and just be wow. like spend the day with, you know, whoever.
Anne of Green Gables.
Now, Anne of Green Gables, as these guys know, is a longstanding passionate love.
Were you sad when Gilbert died last week?
I was very, very sad too. That was the end of it. It felt like the end of an era.
It was the end of my childhood. Yeah. Died when he was my first love.
Yeah. I mean, oh God.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Big time Anne of Green Gables. I'm right there with you.
Who else would I like?
I could probably put only characters from Anne of Green Gables on there.
It's true.
Like, let's pop Marilla on there. Let's go ahead and get Matthew in there. Yeah. 100%.
God, I love that book story. Okay. So Anne of Green Gables, let's see, probably Link from Zelda. Cause I think it would be awesome to just go on vacation.
Absolutely.
Together and youthful, you know, fun.
Love it.
Spontaneous. Pal. Love it. And God, this is a hard. This is hard. I have so many books that I love, and it's super hard. I mean, it could be George Clooney, just in anything.
Sure.
Or Clive Owen. You know, like I think.
Well, no, save those because I am going to.
Oh, we're
going to
go there.
You a romance / sexcapade category.
Oh God. Okay. Well, we already. I mean, could it be like a Cat in the Hat or something?
Yes, absolutely.
You know? Like that. Yeah, what absolutely. A fun time.
Let's go crazy. Cat in the Hat. Great. Okay. Yeah. So next one is, your romantic interest. Could be alternate universe husband. Could be just like a series of one night stands with this guy.
Real people
or four characters. It doesn't really matter.
Or characters. There's a guy in a romance novel series called Kushiel's Dart.
Okay.
His name is Jocelyn and he is a warrior and protects his prostitute love. Wonderful. It's a racy adult
little bodice
woman.
Ripper.
It's kind of like Game of Thrones with lots of prostitution.
Okay.
Right. And hitting sex, but in a good way, like in a very flowery way. Uh-huh. It's an amazing series.
Jocelyn,
if you haven't read it.
Got him.
So he also knows how to use a sword really well, and he's a paladin, and he does not like prostitution, but he falls in love with a prostitute who, anyway, this we can talk about that more. Clive Owen.
Great. I will definitely. Never argue with that choice. Have you been watching The Nick?
I have not. I have it on my DVR. I know it's good.
It's fucking great.
I know.
It's so great. Him mixed with Steven Soderbergh directing stuff is like the best thing you'll ever see. I'm very excited for you. Very excited for you.
Okay.
Jocelyn, Clive Owen. Final.
The last one would be, I don't know, George McClane. I feel like I should get a blonde. Can it be like Robert Redford from The States?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Like that.
Any
oh, no,
era.
Paul Newman from HUD.
Great.
Let's
there
just
you
be
go.
Specific about that guy.
I couldn't agree
he
more.
He was kind of a dick in the movie, like a big dick, but...
But that era of PN,
yeah.
Paul Newman. Okay. I don't know why I felt like I needed to tell you what PN stood for since we had just discussed Paul Newman. Okay, next one. Next one is you can have a soundtrack that's sort of playing underneath your life that a singer-songwriter, band, whoever, composer, doesn't matter, that you would love to sort of have be like, this is the kind of underscore. And it doesn't have to be a pre-existing thing, but it's like, you know you love the Velvet Underground. This would be like a special Felicia soundtrack.
Okay. Three of them. Erasure.
Oh, great.
Would definitely be
wonderful.
I love Ravel.
Okay.
Definitely. Right. I love my French.
Beautiful.
Sort of passionate, but dissonant sort of music.
Great.
And
great description.
Definitely. Then I would go like MIA.
All right.
You
let's
know,
get a nice cross section
like,
in.
Real, like international flair. Like, I love her.
Yeah. Great.
Sort of like mashup sort of style.
This is great.
Powerful lady.
Love it. Okay. Tomorrow you wake up in the morning, Matrix style. You have downloaded. There's pick three, a skill that you are an expert at.
Oh my God.
You just know it. You wake up, you know Kung Fu.
Wow.
So to speak.
I would definitely know Mandarin.
Great.
I would be able to, play the piano.
Great.
Always wanted to play the piano and be able to show off at a party.
Great.
Or just know how to play the piano. Talk to animals.
Great. Great, great, great. God, you really...
I'm nailing it, right?
You're nailing this game. You're not going to end up with anything you're disappointed by. This is all solid.
No, I'm good sterling, with all of it.
Fantastic stuff. Okay. Final category is... what do I want for you? Final category for you. You helped co-create three things. Now, that could be a business. It could be a specific video game. It could be a work of art. You helped paint the Mona Lisa, whatever. There's three things that are out there that you have not been, you've not received credit for, but turns out you were one of the geniuses behind it. Three.
Wow. That's great. All of the Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright movies.
God,
I'll just, I'll choice. Nose in on that tomorrow.
Absolutely.
The iPhone.
Great, 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 great.
And, God, this is a really deep question.
I just very smugly shrugged. Like, that was like, awesome. I want to make sure the listener understands how gross my response was just now.
Pudding.
Great.
Just like that's pudding is, even though I can't have pudding. Chocolate anymore,
yeah.
Butterscotch, vanilla,
sure. Banana,
pudding, like banana,
great.
Pudding like things. Yeah.
Great. Pudding. Great. Pudding. Okay. Now pudding. This is just the thing where I'm going to do something. And, the only thing that you need to know is like as fast or as long, I guess not as long, but as fast or as semi-fast as you want. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
I'm going to pause this. I'm going to do some eliminating.
Wow.
I'm going to come back.
This is elaborate.
100% okay. Guaranteed fictional future.
Fictional.
So that's
I love
what's
it.
Happening. Everyone, you need not worry. It will seem as if no time has passed to you. All right. I think you might have had the shortest ever thing.
Why is it? I don't know what you did. But
I just was making hash marks, uh-huh. You know, but I only got to three before you told me to stop. So it was very quick and easy
for me
to do
this. Oh, wow. I'm sorry.
No. It's fun because that makes it go faster. Number one, I want to congratulate you on your beautiful home in Placencia, Belize.
How beautiful.
Wonderful, wonderful work. Now, I don't know how... It doesn't really matter because this is something that you acquire magically, but rest assured that while you're relaxing in Belize, you are also able to eat all the burgers and onion rings that you want with absolutely zero negative health ramifications whatsoever. Wonderfully done. I don't know if that's something that your good buddy, the Cat in the Hat, enjoys eating.
Well, you know, he likes to go fishing, but it's cool.
You know, he does. I guess he does love to go fishing. Now, what does this say? Because I can't remember. Oh, okay. I got it. Yes. No, I'm going to save that. This is also very cool and it totally matches up. You are best friends with Cat in the Hat because you can talk to animals. You can talk to all animals.
It makes sense.
Right?
That is amazing
that
coincidence.
That just came together. And you guys, and you'll just be
English.
Strolling around with your own life soundtrack to MIA.
Well, of course. MIA. I mean, look at him. He is street.
I mean, you got it. And then also you can jump into Fallout as a world whenever you want.
Well, the post-apocalyptic world is, it's dangerous, but you know, when we're driving around with our soundtrack, we just pop a cap in the Raiders.
That's right. You know how it goes. Then the last two things I want to congratulate you on, I'm going to put together because I find them both very sensual indeed. I'd like to see you spread pudding all over HUD-era Paul Newman's body and lick it off.
This is not a bad thing.
Because you are responsible for the creation of pudding, and you certainly ended up with a very, very sexy man.
Wow. That butterscotch on Paul Newman? Yeah. Butterscotch pudding
That's
on Paul Newman.
Work.
Boy, oh boy.
Good luck wanting to do any of this other stuff.
No.
Because now you have butterscotch pudding and Paul Newman to
We're
going to
be on the
with.
Beach and forget about
That's right.
all that post-apocalyptic roving around.
That's right.
day life, nightlife, I'm covered.
There's no competition. Felicia, since we spent half the time talking about how busy you are, I really thank you for doing the podcast.
Oh, no worries.
Over here, and it was a total pleasure.
I really appreciate you inviting me on your podcast.
There's a gajillion things. I feel certain that if you're listening to this, you already know where you can find Felicia and what she does and what Geek and Sundry is. If you don't, I'd say give it a Google.
Check it out. Geekandsundry.com, FeliciaDay.com. Lots of things going on. My book is going to be out in August.
And here's what we'll do, too. If you want to do this, I guess we can talk about this offline, but when it does come out, we can do like... I can do a little contest within the podcast where I'm promoting the book and we can like do a giveaway.
That'd be awesome. I will give
so we'll
you a giveaway book.
Perfect.
That would be awesome.
Perfect. So more details on that to come, guys, in a few months. And until then, I bid you farewell. I'm going to go hang out with Anne of Green Gables. I've just decided that
you
I absconded with her since
bitch.
You got that. It's on.
Bye.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.